This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
That little squirt who was playing in the middle of the park for them tonight, he's 1.6 metres. I just put it into the thingy converter. 5'2" for a professional footballer playing in midfield. That is fucking outrageous.
That makes Barry Bannon look like a giant. Right, anyway, let's start.
Usually every time he finished a song, he'd get on a payphone wherever he was in the country and call me and wake me up. And so, like, he'd lay the phone down and start playing his guitar, you know? And that's how I heard this song the first time. I always thought this was a real pretty one. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me this week, Mr. Chris Budd. Welcome.
Hello.
Have you seen Dan?
No, this sounds like very much like a Partridge scene.
Does it?
Dan.
Nowhere to be seen.
As per usual.
Hopefully he'll turn up in the next show, but don't turn off just yet.
It's about to get so good.
Action-packed show. We were going to put out a reaction show to the Bolton game, and it was all ready, but now that part's just going to be stitched into this show. We will bring you, as you may remember, the last show, Where Were You When We Were Good? And we go back to the year of 1996, am I right in saying?
I think you are, yeah, 96, yeah. 97 season.
Exactly, and so hold on at the end till that, and we will obviously go into what we are thinking in terms of the Dean Smith revolution. First of all, though, 3 points, and we'll do these quickly. So, I mean, this actually happened a while ago. Well, it seems like months ago. It was only a matter of weeks, actually. But Leicester City's chairman passing away in, obviously a tragic incident. There's no justice in the game, is there? When somebody who actually, an overseas chairman who actually got it, how to run a club, how to sink yourself into its traditions and actually run, you know, with a bit of heart and not, you know, it's not just cheap pandering, you know, to the fans just to win over popularity.
I think he genuinely engaged with them, didn't he? He was really
exactly.
Liked. He was liked at the club, and I think he'd apparently had done a really good job in like the wider sort of community as well within Leicester.
Yeah, there's no surprise when you integrate that far in and on a genuine level and get everybody moving in the, you know, the same direction. Success does tend to come. We always, as football fans, moan about bad owners. So give him credit where he's due. He was a shining example to anybody who buys into a football club in the English leagues.
Yeah, one of the good guys.
Point number two, and this is more of about the bad guys. What did you make of this? Was it the Spiegel? newspaper in Germany outed the alleged talks of a formation of a Super League, which will see the likes of Chelsea, Manchester City, United, Arsenal and Liverpool disappear off into the sunset and you know, basically earn a lot of money.
I don't see it happening in the short term. Long term, who knows? I suppose it depends what the offer is and if they see it as a worthwhile thing. I don't think it would be any good for the certainly for the Premier League or the British game in general. But
well, that's it. I mean, the Premier League must be fighting this. I mean, Sky, if Sky had the TV rights for it, then they don't care because they would assume that this would create more viewers. I mean, I keep my football mean and lean. I watch Aston Villa and that's pretty much it. Since I've been in the Championship, I hardly watch even Match of the Day. But I'm not I'm not a good example of somebody that the TV companies are obviously aiming at. Certain fans, they watch their own club and then they'll watch the Champions League, won't they? Because it's marketed, you know, to fuck to them.
Yeah, and just the general armchair supporters. But it's so spread out now, isn't it? Obviously between Sky and BT and the bits that you get on terrestrial now and everything else. It's just kind of a never-ending, you know, there's always an extra, you know, a game on a Thursday or a Sunday. Or recently there's been games at 5:30 and 7:45 on a Saturday. It's kind of, it just seems like they're trying to shove another game in wherever they can in the schedule.
It's surely kind of reached saturation point, but in terms of, you know, the romance of the English league and not romance really, the tradition of it, I think it kills it dead. But then again, that's probably when the Premier League took over, and of course, you know, Villa had a chance to be up there if they won that first one when they could have. Who knows what would have happened? But when it gets real in terms of like the top 5-6 clubs starting to the gap widening, Villa obviously choose this kind of period to get relegated and be so far back that they're not even at the table of these conversations. The reality is, those top 5-6 teams, can they ever be pegged back? This is the problem. I mean, Villa have got potential to peg them back, but they've got to be in that bloody league in the first place.
And there's a lot of teams who would probably claim the same right. You know, you look at someone like West Ham and, you know, big stadium, potential to earn a lot of money. The Geordies are the same and they're miles behind as well. It's like
West Ham.
There's all these clubs that claim to be competitive and just aren't.
West Ham. I can take that off record if you want.
No, I'm definitely joking. But there's many of these clubs that are just claiming to be huge that are nowhere near them, but yet they are still miles ahead of Villa.
Yeah, but the Super League, from my point of view, I don't want to see this kind of shit happening.
I mean, God, imagine taking Barcelona and Real Madrid out of the Spanish League. The rest of that league would be garbage.
I love the irony of Brexit happening and they're talking about a European Super League.
I know, it's fantastic.
Anyway, point number three, lots of football supporter meetings. Recently, I went to London to the Football Supporters Federation EFL clubs meeting, and this is one of the, you know, I don't like going to the EFL meetings just because it's I used to like the days when I used to go to the Premier League meetings. EFL, nobody cares about the EFL. Joking aside, talking about the transition from the Safe Standing campaign to the Standing for Choice campaign, this whole idea of it being rail seating has been dissolved to make it more a campaign about choice. And obviously that's got some movement now after the recent events of the last few months and the petition that led it to be debated in the House of Commons. Also, we talked about weather postponements, the notice given to supporters, also about rail fares, and this is something that football supporters and reps, etc., have been talking about, is trying to get the rail companies to lay on discounts to help, you know, away fans specifically. But there's been a few meetings with the rail companies, and the consensus is football fans are still considered as scum, and they wreck trains when they're drunk, and it's hard for the train authorities to justify trying to help them. So it's a bit of a impasse at the moment on that matter. Then there was issues about how iFollow, the streaming services, are potentially affecting attendance rates. But I put forward the notion that actually the quality of these streams, as anybody who subscribes to the AVTV stream will know, that especially at the start of this season when the actual picture was cutting out, the audio wasn't synced. I mean, never mind them affecting supporters, it's actually ripping off supporters at the moment. So that's something they've got to look at, to actually supply supporters with a service that actually justifies the outlay on it.
It was a high price for a very poor product, wasn't it? And a consistently poor as well.
And also, Villa opted out of the iFollow service, which is basically the EFL standard one, because they said, oh, we'll offer a more personalised product. And for an overseas fan, they charge £6 per game, when iFollow, which is used by most of the EFL clubs, is £5 a game. But what do you get for that extra quid? Pretty much bugger all. It's the most stripped down service, just one commentator and that's it. And they could easily do a little pre-show, a little halftime, a few stats put coming on the screen, things like that. It's kind of simple to do, and then like a little post-match wrap-up, but it's pretty much on, off, and that's it.
It's about as basic. It's as basic as when we've had games streamed, like reserve games on YouTube, isn't it? It's really poor.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, it's poor because they opted out just so they could charge fans more, and that doesn't kind of sit well with me. It's a bit shystery, shall I say?
Especially when I'd imagine the amount of money they're realistically going to make isn't going to make or break anything anyway.
No, exactly. Also, in the meetings front, the Aston Villa fan consultation group finally has a meeting with the new Villa CEO, Christian Perslow. I just helped finalise the agenda earlier on today, so that's now gone through, so I'll report back. Right, moving on. Mayo Mansed has been nominated in the Football Supporters Federation Awards, which take place on the 3rd of December at the Tower of London. Nominated for Best Fan Media, so thanks for anybody who nominated us. And if you can, please do vote for us. It's pretty much mission impossible, because there's like mega blogs and podcasts that are in there, like Ask Blog, which they have like 20 times the amount of patrons, for example, than My Old Man Says have. And you know, they got like 500,000 Facebook followers. And then the Anfield Wrap, which is one of the biggest podcasts out there, they actually have their own app, which they charge £5 a month to listen to their podcast. So that's what we're up against. We need more supporters so we can actually have some resources to take on these.
We need the quantity to get the quality.
Exactly. Well, that's very well put, actually. But anyway, let's go down swinging. So please do vote. The link will be in the podcast, and you'll see it about on our social media as well. Thank you very much. Also, another thing, hopefully we'll get some T-shirts out on the My Old Man Said .com site with the podcast cover on them, so you can support us that way as well as looking very cool. The design is a let's say it's a Villa mashup of the Rolling Stones Beggar's Banquet album cover. Right, let's get into the show. Essentially, we're talking about the first four Dean Smith games as his pre-season: two home wins, two away losses. And now the fixtures, starting with Derby onwards, pretty much everyone up to Christmas is a pretty meaty fixture against some team that's a genuine contender for the playoffs.
I think the season starts here, doesn't it, really?
The fixture list, if you're not aware, reads next game away against Derby, then we've got Blues, Forest at home, then Middlesbrough away, West Brom away, Stoke at home, and Leeds at home, and this is all before Christmas. So I think, Chris, the next month or so will pretty much define our season, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think we'll know, certainly the next November, especially to begin with. You know, it's three home games, one away game, all games at home you'd think we need to be getting wins from, and then big games over the festive season where we're going to have to take points from teams who are realistically going to be either above us or in and around us. So it's, you know, a really big six to 8 week period now.
Yeah, I think as we said in the previous show, that Fulham made their big comeback based on a six game run where they played all the top six, and I think bar a draw against Bristol, beat everybody last season, and that got them, because obviously you're clawing 3 points back on every team that's above you, so it helps you get back into the picture straight away. In terms of their promotion credentials, those games that are up and coming, we've got to get at it. And so Dean Smith's had three games within 6 days. That was his first introduction. And then he's finally had a week to prepare a game. And he said in his post-match against Bolton that this was probably the worst performance of the four. But obviously, it was a must-win in terms of keeping us in the picture and keeping us optimistic going forward. So just in summation, it's two wins out of two at home, and then obviously two losses away from home. But in terms of improvement straight away, what have you seen over the four games?
Finally, you can start to see how he wants to set his team up. There's clearly a plan in terms of a much more possession-based game. He wants them to press higher. You can tell he's obviously trying to get Grealish further up the field where he can hurt teams. The wide men are getting involved a lot more, which is great. It's really great to see them playing out from the back. You know, the full backs are having to get involved a lot more. And I think he probably knows, well, it would appear he knows what his goalkeeper and back four is, which under Bruce for the last however many weeks and months, you know, it was chopping and changing every week and no one had any idea. There seems to be an element of continuity creeping in.
Before he came in, I remember we had that conversation and I was talking about maybe it's time to get rid of the defensive DM. And
yeah,
that's one thing straight away he has done. He's, instead of going for Jedinak and Whelan as his, let's say, his first choices, the first thing he did was obviously he went for Bjarnason straight away. And with Bjarnason injured against Bolton, he decided to go for Hourihan. And hearing his post-match, he was talking about Hourihan's range of passing, which, you know, obviously some teams, when they play a deeper midfielder, it's not necessarily a DM just to help the back four out. It's to actually instigate the play going forward.
Yeah, they take up almost like a quarterback role, don't they? They're very much there to kind of distribute.
Exactly. A bit like how Barry Bannon was playing for Sheffield Wednesday when they came to Villa Park.
Yeah, well, and how Ryan Woods used to play under for Smith at Brentford, really. He'd play much deeper and he'd control the tempo and dictate the play.
And Smith said after the Bolton game, he was a bit... it was critical about his wide men were kind of coming in too often. So it obviously gave Hourihan less of an option to obviously spread and switch the play with the longer ball. Speaking of Dean Smith's post-match interviews, I mean, it's kind of a revelation listening to Dean Smith talk compared to, let's just say, tracing back, my old man said, been going as a website since the McLeish days. And listening to Dean Smith, it's probably the most articulate and interesting manager we've probably had in that time. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, you can understand what he's saying, unlike Lambert and McLeish. That's always a help.
Don't be racist.
Oh, I'm definitely not. I do love the Scot. Plus, we love John McGinn, so we can't be racist.
This club was built on the shoulders of Scotsmen.
Exactly. You can tell already with Smith, it's not a regurgitated message. You know, he's not mumbling on about how big the club is and the fan base every week and the pressure that comes with it. He actually, when he's asked a question, he gives almost a tactical analysis in his answer. It's great. You know, he's clearly switched on. He's clearly very aware of what we do well and what we don't do well. And then what his expectation of the players is. There's clearly a plan, and if they don't adhere to it or they don't live up to expectations, he will be pretty transparent with his criticism, or his constructive criticism. I don't get the feeling he's going to come out and blast players in the same way that Bruce sort of hung a couple of people out to dry. But if people and the team are deserving of criticism, he seems to have found a way to do it in a bit more of an erudite way than just slamming people.
So he's also on the other side of the coin. I mean, for example, Lambert, that would be one of his strategies. Talk up every player, doesn't matter what they've done.
One thing I know I'm getting for the lads is everything out of them, and they were excellent last week, I thought. Our away form has been excellent, but the lads that came in were excellent for
us. It's all about this. I mean, it's a bit of a base roots ideology. We've got to keep the confidence up. Like, for example, after the Bolton game, you know, we'll talk about Nyland later on, but, I mean, his judgment, it's there to be seen. It's not the greatest.
It's poor.
It's a potential danger if we're talking about promotion here. But when they asked him about that after the game, and I think he was asked a supplementary question saying, oh, but he's made some good saves. And he actually said, I expect all goalkeepers to be good shot stoppers. And, you know, that is true at this level, especially the top two tiers. If your keeper's not considered a good shot stopper, then, you know, what's he doing? We'll talk about him later. But Smith, you know, if you could read minds, you know what Smith's thinking, put it that way. But in terms of the Bolton game, he said it wasn't a great performance. I kind of agree. I thought we were more impressive, especially against like QPR, for example, and even in the early stages against Norwich. I thought it was a bit kind of bitty, but we were always in control, apart from, let's say, Bolton had a few inklings coming up to half-time when it was still at 1-0.
I mean, the Chester clearance was
unbelievable. Yeah, I think that was game-changing, probably.
Game-changing at that point in the game. And I actually thought him and Twan Zabi played pretty well. Twan Zabi, again, was very assured at the back. We discussed earlier, Neil Taylor is slowly but surely sort of growing in confidence and the game time is helping him. Hutton, I think, is going to have to start stepping up a bit more positional-wise. I think, you know, if you've got Bree, there's options.
You know
options.
What it says on the can with Alan Hutton? He's not going to suddenly turn into something else.
No.
Going back to Nzebi, he's kind of smooth. If he doesn't make the tackle, he reads the game really well and he recovers very well.
Yeah. He's a really good athlete, isn't he? So he's always going to be able to compete with people for pace and power. And he can play.
Yeah, when you talk about... They'd always use this term, he's a Rolls Royce of a centre back. And I think, did they use it for Rio Ferdinand? And I think he can.
Yeah, and certainly Bruce used it about Chester, didn't he, for a long time?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, when they say that, I think it normally says they're quite, you know, they're good on the ball, basically. They're good.
And they're consistent, aren't they? They're very steady, I think, is the thing. Of the
yeah, and they can read the game rather than being a bruiser. But I think he's definitely developing in that direction, which makes you wonder. I still don't understand why Bruce wasn't.
It's staggering.
Rolling him out. I mean, it's early season, so it's a good time to get him going. And it's not as if, I mean, it's obviously a bit of hindsight now, so you're thinking, oh, young defender, it might cost us some games. But so in hindsight, I mean, we wouldn't have been any worse off. We'd actually potentially be better off because you'd have had those games. And
they'd have built a partnership by now.
Built a partnership and it would have been all right. Chester scored 2 offside goals.
Yeah.
One of them the referee didn't quite get. Bolton, they played pretty well with their keeping that offside line. And Villa were caught offside a few times, actually.
Yeah, sometimes very sloppily. I think that was probably one of the themes of the game throughout, really, for Villa. It was quite, as you said, quite bitty. Villa were, you know, they got into good positions, but again, the final ball, the final touch, the final decision was lacking. And we still look quite, we're trying to play this sort of ball retention heavy style. But we either don't have the technical ability yet, or it just, when it doesn't flow, teams can, when we give the ball away, we still need to be better winning it back because we are giving the ball away too easily at times. And we don't, you lose the ability to control the tempo, don't you? You can never take a breather then. If you can control the game and when you want to just keep the ball and take the sting out of the game, you have a break. We don't seem to do that.
Yeah, I think the problem we've got at the moment with the possession-based football is there's a couple of loose, let's say weak links in terms of playing that way. One is Alan Hutton. 2 is Codger. Yeah. I don't think Codger's, let's say, football IQ is up there. Once he gets the ball, instead of that quick pass to keep this possession going in a progressive way, he'll sometimes take a couple of, you know, he'll lean back into the defender, take another touch, and then try to start his hustle. There was a couple of times I noticed against Bolton, there was another pass on, you know, one touch pass, but he leant back into the defender, then suddenly he was surrounded by 2 or 3, and it just breaks down the whole premise, premise of what you're trying to build with possession.
Yeah, and we always look our most dangerous when we shift the ball quickly. You know, we talked way earlier in the season about McGinn with that sort of snap, crackle and pop to the way they play, and Grealish wants to get his foot on the ball and play, and Hourihan does as well. Someone like Codger, you can afford to have one player who can change the pace of the game, and usually that's Grealish. He'll slow things down, but he'll usually have an end product. Codger is probably better actually when he's facing the goal and he goes through the gears and plays quicker. I think, you know, the more time he has, he seems to be that he makes the worst and worst decisions when he has to think about it.
Yeah.
He was guilty of that 2 or 3 times.
Codger is like a man up front, and that's it. I mean, I think they started off with Abraham wide on the left, which is somewhere where he used to play, you know, early days for Chelsea, and he actually, you know, had some success there, but obviously he's converted as he's gone on to a centre forward. But I think, you know, Abraham's got a bright brain, and, you know, as we saw when he played in Grealish at the start.
Yeah, it was really, he's good. Isn't he? You know, he's great with his back to goal, and he actually brings people into play, unlike
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Top of the list of what Smith's doing is trying to get Grealish into play further up the field, which is obviously hasn't made any secret about that. We saw it especially against QPR when Grealish was actually, you know, getting in the penalty box and, you know, making things happen and trying to hurt teams further up the field. I mean, also later on in that QPR game, he was again guilty of picking up the ball, you know, off the back four, which is something we've said, why is he doing this?
What's the point? Yeah,
first, you know, 3 minutes opening goal was exactly what he should be doing more. And you know, I always thought in my time of supporting Villa, the best midfielder in terms of breaking through the lines was David Platt. I mean, he was better than most of our strikers in terms of finishing, but he timed his runs perfectly. And Villa knew what they were doing. You know, they were looking always to get him through. And Grealish, you know, he should sit down and watch a few videos of Platt at Villa, that is.
I mean, there's no reason why he couldn't be that kind of player.
Yeah, Platt was more of like a three-quarter striker type deal, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, he was more of he wanted to play off the striker, didn't he, as opposed to a genuine...
He's also the most fouled player at the moment, Grealish. That's his moniker at the moment, the most fouled player in the Championship. That's how he's going to be remembered. That's going to be his epitaph unless he continues his progression. But in terms of midfield, I think that, well, McGinn, no problem with him, with Grealish. And then I think Horahan was all right. What did you think of Horahan playing in that deeper role?
I think he drifted in and out of the game. I don't think that was necessarily for any fault of his own. I just think it was one of those games where Villa at times played a little bit more direct into feet of the two, of Abraham and even up to Codger and the other wide man, obviously Doma and then obviously Bolasie. Yeah. And I don't think Horahan is particularly strong under the high ball, which Bolton tended to be quite direct.
Yeah.
So the game kind of passed him by in periods. I think he was a little bit slow to release the ball. But once he gets into his rhythm, I think he's fine. He just needs to... I think once he gets consistency and he knows exactly what role he's meant to play, I think he'll flourish and he'll probably improve as the season goes on. He certainly doesn't seem to be the goal threat he was this time last year. Yeah, we obviously started the season really well last year, but I think he's probably having to play a slightly different role.
Well, I disagree, because at the start of this season, he's been coming off the bench, but he's actually made an impact. You know, he's been changing games off the bench. I mean, if you look back to...
Wigan
was obviously the big one. Obviously, Yeovil, he sorted that one out.
But scored the winner, and Blackburn scored the goal.
He still gets assists and scores even when he comes off the bench, which I'm not going to call him Tommy Johnson, but at least... He was making an impact, which was, you know, rare for a Villa sub. Let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Horahan's going to be Smith's, let's say, an option for home games. I don't know if he'll play him in that position for away games, or let's say, you know, with these tough games coming up, would he play him in that position against like Middlesbrough or the Baggies? That would be up for debate, whether he might go a bit more Steve Bruce, shall we say, and go for Whelan. I mean, what do you think about
a little bit more solid?
Do you think Jedinak has got a future under Smith, or do you think it's game over?
So. I think what he'll find himself being is probably a bit part player. I think he warrants his place on the bench just because of his versatility, that the fact that you can play him as a centre-back or as a defensive midfielder. So he's a great option to have. Because of the way Dean Smith wants to play and at a slightly higher tempo, I don't think he's going to be, and at his age, he's not going to be the main man going forward. But I think that was always going to be the case, realistically. That's not to say he doesn't have a role to play, though.
It'd be interesting to see in January if Dean Smith just does recall Tommy Elphick, who obviously has that clause that he can come back.
Yeah, you'd expect there to be cover brought in, be it another, you know, bringing back Elphick or You know, no one quite knows the lie of the land yet as far as financially where we stand, if we can go out and buy someone. I'm sure Smith will have options that he wants to go out and strengthen in certain areas.
Yeah, but there's no way Hull are paying all of Elphick's wages. So if even half. So I think they would look at bringing him back before obviously chancing their hand on any old defender, shall we say. I mean, if they pick somebody who's young, who exactly what Smith is looking for, then they'll obviously buy, but they're not just going to buy a centre-back for the sake of it when they can just recall Elphick.
Yeah.
In terms of issues that Smith's facing, I mean, as we said, he's got this kind of short period to kind of prep before he goes into, which is a run of games up to Christmas, probably facing the toughest teams in the league. But his main problems are exactly the ones that cost Bruce's job. A is defence, which at least he's addressed it by playing the players in position. And there's hope, as long as we stay clear from injuries, then there's a hope that they might get us to January. But the goalkeeper is the main concern. And against Bolton, it's kind of heart-in-mouth time when the ball is crossed in at any point.
Yeah, he just refuses to come, doesn't he? It's still...
And when he comes, you know, when he, like the one that was floating wide, he said...
Oh, that was a joke.
He went up to try to, you know, catch it and put it off for a corner, and it was like a good 4 feet away from the post.
And he dropped one in the 6 yard box that nearly resulted in a goal, didn't he? As well, he doesn't instill confidence yet.
Not at all. Some good news. Well, hopefully it's potentially good news. Is Villa announced the appointment of Neil Cutler as their new goalkeeping coach, and obviously we know what he's going to be doing for the next month or so, teaching old Nyland how to catch cross balls.
Or punch. Just come out for stuff in general.
Just do something.
Yeah, react.
I mean, we discussed question marks over Codger fitting into how Smith wants to play, but Scott Hogan has been back from injury in the last few games. He got about 40 minutes against Norwich. Got about 10 minutes against Bolton, so we can now reintroduce, we haven't got a jingle, so sorry about that, the Scott Hogan touch count meter. Norwich, 40 minutes, how many touches? Well, you know the answer because it's written down here, but 4 touches in 40 minutes. Bolton came on for 10 minutes, 1 touch.
There's definitely a theme coming here.
And this has been the same since we started the Scott Hogan touch count meter. And you know, this isn't about Scott Hogan as a player, if he's any good or not. It's not really. It's about frequencies and who is on what wavelength and how we are going to play him. I mean, the funny thing about the Bolton game: 1 touch in 10 minutes. Whelan came on for 1 minute and got 2 touches. But can you see Hogan being part of what Dean Smith wants to do? Or do you think Dean Smith was rubbing his hands when he managed to get almost, you know, around 10 million for him?
Well, I mean, clearly for Brentford at that time to get the money for him, for someone whose injury record speaks for itself, it was probably an amazing piece of business.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was a good move for Hogan as well. He was an obvious choice. He was a goal scorer. Did it work out? No. Can he be a success at Villa still? I think so. I don't see, while you've got someone like Tammy Abraham, who is a lot better player than him.
Very different.
Very different, but I don't see him starting up front on his own, seems to be how Villa want to play with the one up front. You can't play him in that way, so he's going to have to be accommodated, which we've discussed numerous times. I don't think Villa should be accommodating players.
Yeah.
He's a great option to have. I think he can really do some damage coming off the bench, but I don't know if he's going to be the leading the line for Villa this year.
You can understand the benefits of a possession-based way of playing. If you, let's say you've got 2 threats up top, because he's the nippy man who gets put in from a flick or a through pass or whatever. Like, for example, how Grealish scored against Bolton. Hogan, that's pretty much the playbook you play with Hogan. It's like slide rule pass and through on goal he goes. But no, it's a tricky one. I don't know if it's like just 10 million sitting there and we're not really going to ever see any dividends really from it.
I think he could be a really good option away from home if you're going to play a counter-attack. But
yeah,
from the way Smith appears to have set his team up, it looks like we're going to tend to try and have a lot of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, we got 60% against Bolton. I think it was 68% away against QPR, which
is crazy, really, to lose that game.
Yeah, but you look at the way McLaren set up QPR, and he has set them up to be a sharp counter-attacking team. I mean, that's the basis of how they're going to play home or away. I can't see us playing one way away and one way at home. I think we will be playing possession based all the way through, but it'll be interesting to see how we do against Derby and even the Blues now, because the Blues have clicked. I mean, I've said this all the way since the start of the season on this podcast, that the Blues were playing well but just not finding the extra bit. You know, they always say, you know, extra bit of quality in terms of finishing, but they were having these draws they were having. I think they've had eight of them. These were all games, as you know, Blues people will tell you, they could have won. So all they needed to do was for it to click and actually start putting away their chances, and then they'd come good, and suddenly they're looking more of a promotion threat than Villa are at the moment.
To be fair to the guy, you've got to give Monk a bit of credit, because with the resources he's had, with all the embargoes and everything else that's gone on over there, I think he's just really quietly gone about his business.
Yeah, and he seems to be happy where he is at the moment. And it's definitely going to be interesting against Forest as well. I mean, I watched that game in the cup against Burton. I mean, they were knocked out, but as soon as Graban came on, I knew he was going to be the next to score, and he did. And obviously, they made 10 changes for that game, and some of the guys that came on, you thought, actually Forest are playoff material as well, because they spent, I don't know where they got the money from all of a sudden, but they spent a bit in the close season as well.
Yeah.
Oh, we've got all these Midlands games coming up. I think, the next three games, I think, will tell us a hell of a lot against Derby, Blues and Forest.
Yeah.
And now, for the second time on the My Old Man Said podcast, and we still haven't got a jingle.
We don't. We'll find one.
Dan isn't here, and Chris refuses to start singing Where Were You When We Were Good? So Where Were You When We Were Good looks back on, let's say, idiosyncratic moments in Villa history. This is the one we've chosen. It's more about what one man can do for your team. And in this case, we didn't actually win the game. But cast your minds back to Monday, the 30th, September 1996.
Draper with the corner. Turnicek came but didn't collect, and it's there. Dwight York has scored at last. Just 4 minutes gone. Newcastle had the free kick. Shearer had the strength to hold off the challenge. Oh, an equaliser from Ferdinand almost immediately. A perfect reply from Newcastle. Staunton, terrific burst down that left side. And pulled back well for York. It should have been a second. Denied by the post. York can't believe it. Looking to sweep forward again with Gillespie now. Still Gillespie. And Ferdinand! He escaped the marking completely. And the finish, once again, was so decisive. And Aston Villa will be dismayed at their defending there. Gillespie's corner. Up goes Ferdinand. Shearer. And Ferdinand! Off the line. But it squeezed in. And Shearer's got it this time. 3-1 to Newcastle. Now Draper was cautioned just a couple of minutes ago, and if it's another yellow, it's going to be a red one as well. Well, it was a foolish act really from Draper, as if they didn't have enough problems already. And Aston Villa now will want the sanctuary of the dressing room. The angle run by Dwight York. Now can he set something up here? Maybe for himself. Still York! Two goals from Dwight York tonight. A barren season, remember, until now. It's taken by David Batty. Gillespie. The marking didn't look too good, and the header has sneaked in from Steve Howie. They didn't really get themselves together, organised at the back, Aston Villa, and they've been punished once again. The supremacy is with Newcastle again. But here's Sasa Cercic, slotted through. York! A hat-trick for Dwight York. 20 minutes to go. Aston Villa, and Dwight York in particular, refusing to be written off. Cercic on the break for Aston Villa. Cercic has come more and more into the game in the second half. He wants it again now. Spun away from him, offside, as York slots it in. All he can say now is keep going. They are continuing to embarrass Newcastle defensively. It's just about offside.
So, do you remember this game, Chris?
Yeah. fond memories of that the year before and that season especially.
It's a bit of
96-97.
Bit of a slugfest between Villa and Newcastle that game. We've had some. It's funny where the Newcastle Villa games sit. They got this kind of internet beef in recent years because of the we relegated them a couple of times. But going back in the day, obviously Villa versus Liverpool, Villa versus Manchester United. You know, these were the fixtures certainly I of a certain generation would look forward to. But in the 90s, the birth of the Premier League, Newcastle were a force then and Villa were a force in the early years. So when the two came, it was like the, let's say, the new wave of the Premier League. It was kind of a rivalry and always a game that threw up excitement. But in this game, Dwight York scored. We went 1-0 up. And then suddenly, before half time, we were 3-1 down.
And down to 10 men, weren't we?
And then Mark Draper got sent off. So we're up shit creek without a paddle, basically. But then I don't think this has happened for Villa since probably Christian Benteke, where we've had a player who could pretty much step up on his own and get us out of the shit, or actually make a fight of it. And in this game, I mean, Dwight York scored a hat trick. He was up there on his own, and he also had a goal disallowed too. So he could have bagged four, and he could have got us a 4-4 draw
and hit the post.
Yeah, no, he was like a man possessed then. I mean, I think on that game itself, that's when Manchester United probably thought, well, let's get him. And John Gregory obviously decided to get his gun out of the gun cabinet as well. Oh, actually, if he had a gun, he would have shot him. He didn't actually have a gun. But no,
wasn't it Brian Little? Or so would it have been both of them aiming and firing? Or was that Savo's miss-hit shots?
We will talk about Savo in another episode of
He where, gets his own episode, doesn't he?
Where were you when we were good? Well, he pops up in a few. There's been some good suggestions.
Keep them coming in.
If you don't already, do join up on the Mad Few Facebook group, which is dedicated to this podcast. You'll find a link on our social medias or even on the website. Just click on podcast on the myoldmansaid.com website and you'll find the link to the Facebook group there. But people have been leaving their where were you when we were good moments, and there's some crackers actually, so we'll be looking forward to tackling them. But going back to Dwight York, that was an example of when Villa, we don't really have it at the moment. We're still waiting for Grealish to step up. I mean, another example, David Platt. Anything was possible when he played, and he could get you out of the Shizen as well. But as I said, Benteke was probably the last get man who.
Well, he could win. He could win a game, couldn't he? He could win a game
exactly,
on his own.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I've said it a few times on this podcast, but my catchphrase at the when he was playing for us was, "When you've got Benteke, you've got a chance against anybody."
Yeah, it was the same with York, and they all had that kind of. You know, he was entertaining, wasn't he? York, he'd do things off the cuff, and just his personality in general. He was an exciting person to have on the field.
But in terms of Grealish, I mean, I never thought this was rocket science. I just assumed when, for example, when Bruce and the likes of Sherwood were saying, get Grealish on the ball more, I just assumed when he was playing, like, let's say, the archetypal number 10 role, he would be trying to break past the striker and break through, like, you know, Dennis Mortimer back in the day, and obviously David Platt also. But it's almost like Dean Smith is the first one to actually put it in action, and it's suddenly like being considered as rocket science. But I assume that's what they were trying to do with him. But on the evidence of what we've been watching, where he's picking up the ball off the back four, hasn't been the case.
No, and there's other people who can do that role, as Dean Smith has said. You know, he seems to like Hourihane in that kind of like quarterback position, distributing the ball. You know, you want Grealish 10, 20, 30 yards further up the field where he can actually influence the game.
Yeah,
it just seems so obvious to have him there, because when you see him in and around the box, the whole crowd gets on the edge of their seat.
Well, that's the thing. If he picks up the ball deeper, he's running into traffic of four or five guys and he gets the foul. If he's picking the ball up in the box, he's not going to have five or six players around him, starters. And if he gets fouled, penalty. So it kind of makes sense, but it's going to be interesting. He's definitely got a good litmus test now, playing the teams that are considered are rivals, and there's going to be a lift in the intensity of the game. I mean, the only issue with Grealish is he's just going to make sure he doesn't get another yellow card, because the mark where those five yellow cards gets rescinded is 19 games, so that's three games left. So, for example, if he picks up a yellow against Derby, he misses the Blues game. So
I wonder how conscious he'll be of that, you know, going to go to Derby.
Very conscious. Yeah. He mentioned it in his post-Bolton interview.
Okay.
Sorry, going back to this game, the Newcastle Villa game. when I looked at the team sheets, I saw Adam Rachel in goal. Or Adam Rochelle, how would you
pronounce
that?
Did he start that night? Was he on the bench? I'm sure was it Michael Oakes era, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was on the bench. I was never big on Michael Oakes, to be honest.
No.
Because I saw the name, I said, you know, your memory remembers only so much, but Adam only just made one league appearance, and that's when he came on against Blackburn, I think it was Boxing Day game. Oakes had already been sent off, and I think he came on at halftime for Lee Hendry. But apart from that, it was that kind of transitional team after the League Cup and finishing fourth. I mean, they finished fifth this season, didn't they? So it was still...
I think they'd kept most of the team together, hadn't they? I think they'd added Sasa Cercic and Fernando Nelson, but generally it was the same team. But I think, obviously, Paul McGrath had kind of gradually left, didn't he, that season?
Yeah, that was when Staunton slipped in as a centre-back, didn't left-sided centre-back.
And obviously Gary Charles had snapped his ankle, hadn't he?
April
the year before, so he'd lost him at full-back. And if I remember rightly, it was the year that sort of Julian Joachim started to creep through as a bit of a super sub.
Yeah, I used to call him Clubfoot. Because sometimes his finishing was way off, but he pops up in another Where Were You When We Were Good. I think he scores a couple of goals in a December fixture, which we'll be focusing on next month. And Tommy Johnson was on the bench that day as well.
And there's another super sub.
Yeah. So when you look at the Newcastle team, I mean, there's some good players there. I mean, they had Ferdinand Shearer, Ginola.
Yeah, just Shearer, hadn't they?
Gillespie. David Batty was playing, Asprilla was on the bench, Philippe Albert, remember him? He could score from like 35 yards.
The famous chip, wasn't it?
Yeah, Shaka Hislop in goal as well. He's now a pundit on American TV for soccer.
Good Lord.
If I remember rightly, he's one of these people that used to pop up as a pundit when you're watching illegal streams, allegedly.
Who knows? Who would know?
That's what they say anyway on the mean streets of Villa Internet.
Yeah.
I think a closing thought was yet again Championship referee standards
woeful. The referee against Bolton was one of those ones who was a real, you know, it was a scrappy game to a point, but he made it more so in blowing up for really poor decisions, and then McGinn and certainly Grealish, they just got leathered numerous times, and the ref was letting it go, and you kind of, there was just a real lack of consistency from, you know, the two linesmen and the referee. It was, I can imagine the Bolton fans travelling home after the game would have been very annoyed, and certainly the Villa fans who I was sat by were getting very frustrated with him as well.
Yeah,
it was just a poor performance across the board, I think.
I think this is like a moan after every game. I mean,
it comes to something though when you've won 2-0 and been relatively comfortable, and still the referee has been an annoyance though.
Yeah, I mean, if this is one incentive to get promotion, is you always moan about referees, but it was never this bad in the Premier League, was it?
I don't think so. I think what we're not doing, I'm glad if anything we're not moaning about referees costing us games.
Yeah.
This is just, we can visibly see that they're having a poor performance through the game. That's something that I think, you know, that they've been consistent in their inconsistency.
It's been so long since we've been in the Premier League, it's hard to remember what the refereeing was like in that division.
I don't think it made any difference because we were so bad by the end.
We always finish with you saying something negative, so
we'll
finish there. If you're listening on Spotify, please do follow. If you're if you use Spotify but you listen to the show on Podcast Addict or iTunes or whatever, give it a follow on Spotify as well. Just boost those follower numbers. Right, until the next show, which is coming soon, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.